From Paul's house and Storm's house, it's Paul and Storm talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes, on average.
You're an Iowa MRF-er.
I got nothing.
That's all right. That's 2 weeks in a row, though.
I know. I'm really dropping the ball. I'm Paul.
I'm Storm.
And we are going to talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average, it is Monday, February 16th, 2009.
Welcome to show 028. All right, give us
later.
A quick rundown on the big board there, Storm.
All right, 129 minions in the Paul and Storm Brigade of Minions.
And growing.
And growing. Holding steady. And we have our first official furry in the Brigade of Minions.
Yes. We welcome all types in the Brigade. We do not discriminate by creed or color or race or religious affiliation or choice of costume.
In case you're wondering, it is a fox. So, Torrens, you better step it up. 58% on the server fund, that is to replace our server. And
McCartney Watch and Whedon Watch.
Oh, you know, I forgot it last week, too.
Yeah, you did.
It's because there's been no progress.
Ah, well, there you go.
Poochie Corner, in which we discuss people who are discussing us. It's still, I'm going with Song Fu on this one.
Yeah.
And this is the songwriting contest we're participating in. We are we're holding steady. We have a lead over the other two most excellent masters. And that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah.
That's at quickstopentertainment.com, by the way.
Yeah, check it out. So there's so much to talk about this week.
Yeah, let's get to the fresh.
This one will be a bit more for the people who've ever seen us perform live.
Oh, I think I know what it is, and I think I have a title for it.
Well, go ahead then.
All right. The category is Out on a Limb.
Yeah, that's it. How do I... because one of the things... I'll preface it by saying this, that one of the things that has been mentioned to us on several occasions is that people particularly enjoy about this podcast is the sort of look behind the curtain, sort of the peek at what it's like to be a touring rock and roll juggernaut.
What's happening in our heads and what's our experience from, you know... You see us on stage, but what goes into that sausage?
Yes. So, again, stop me if I get too detailed about this, but I think it's safe to say, at this point, Paul and Storm has sort of a double-headed fan base.
Yeah, I would agree.
The one head being people, most of whom I would bet have heard about us through Jonathan Colton or some associated means, sort of the geek culture end of things. The one we talk about a lot on this podcast, that particular style of humor. Then there is the other head of the Hydra. It's not much of a Hydra because it only has two heads. But
no, I would argue there are three and maybe even four heads. Just some of the heads are bigger.
That's true. I think I know where you're going. There's one head that has some overlap with the others that are people who knew us from when we were in Da Vinci's Notebook, our previous a cappella band.
Well, there's another head, but that's
okay.
There's
more heads. But the other head the other main head is people who have heard of us through our appearances on the Bob and Tom Show, which is a morning radio show that's syndicated nationally, mostly in smaller markets. And it is, and I do not say this disdainfully at all when I say it, it is a more blue-collar crowd. It is less tech-oriented. It's a lot more sort of working people, I guess, you know, people who are up at, you know, 7 in the morning listening to the radio.
It's also a comedy crowd. The
show
is focused on...
Yes, it is very much a set-up punchline-oriented crowd, because that's the Bob and Tom Show's, you know, mainstay, is they have lots and lots and lots of comics on. And this past weekend... Before I even get into that, tell me about some of the other heads you're thinking of, Storm.
Oh, what are some of our other heads?
Yeah, the other heads of the fan base Hydra.
Well, I guess the Da Vinci's thing was, but I would agree that it's melded with the Jonathan Colton head.
Yeah.
And it's actually a vestigial head from the Da Vinci days. And we're not in touch with it quite as much as we used to be. But the whole folk acoustic thing.
That's true.
Again,
we did a lot, especially in the Northeast. We did a lot of sort of the folk acoustic concert series and festival circuit.
So really, we do have two big heads.
Yeah, that's a front runner right there for title of the podcast.
Take that as you will, and a series of smaller heads. But back to the matter at hand, which is two heads.
We have been doing quite a bit of touring with Jonathan Colton as of late, and this past weekend was the first in a while full weekend of shows in that was truly just genuinely Bob and Tom fans coming to see us. We did some shows with a wonderful comic named Henry Phillips, who's also very funny. You should check him out. And it was in the middle of Iowa. Which is, you know, it's Iowa. And that was actually, that was a phrase that came out during the first night's show that became sort of our mantra for the trip is, you're in Iowa now, Emmer Effer.
Yeah.
Well, except we didn't say Emmer Effer.
No, we said motherfucker.
Yeah, we said motherfucker. And it was a hard drinking crowd. Again, I don't say that disdainfully. That was, you know, part of the deal is you go out, you drink, and you go see comedy.
Okay, what's your point?
My point being, those of us who have seen us perform live, and if you haven't seen us, if you're familiar with our song Count to Ten, which is a Schoolhouse Rock parody, and one of the verses, Freddie was a farmer, made his living off the land, but now he counts a different way since the combine caught his hand. And then instead of counting to ten, we count to six. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, pause, 9.
Skip two numbers, right.
Yes, and I do a little physical thing where instead of holding up all 10 fingers, I hold 2 of them down. Or 3 of them down. It's a very funny visual joke. Ha 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 ha. So Friday night, Burlington, Iowa, we do that song, get to that verse, and the table right down in front of me bursts into huge peals of laughter, and there's a guy sitting at the table who has in fact lost the ring finger on his left hand in a combine accident.
Yep. Yeah.
Luckily, he was a very good sport. But I mean, that's normally that would be the highlight of any trip. I think that's safe to say, like, that's something memorable that you would recount, you know,
right, like
months and years later.
Much as the family of Dr. Robert Baker, who is the subject of our song Nugget Man, his family came out to the show in Boston. You remember that kind of thing.
Yeah. Now, I tell you honestly, when I tell you that was the third most memorable thing that happened during a show that weekend.
Yeah.
Second most memorable, very quickly, there was an extremely... The next night, before we even started, all during Henry's set, there was a particularly drunken, loud woman, a Zaftiglas.
She was round and she had very large breasts.
Yes, and she was the type of person who... even without the aid of alcohol, would be probably the person who would lead with her breasts in any social situation.
She had a lowercase p personality, but thought of herself as an uppercase p personality.
And she was out to have fun on Saturday night. So she had done a lot of talking and squealing and calling attention to herself during Henry's set. So we perform our first song, opening band, and she had done some attention drawing to herself. We sort of, you know, messed around with her a little bit. Her phone rang. We picked on her about that. And we dubbed her. Her name was Crystal. And we dubbed her Crystal Titwaggler. And Storm decided, aptly I thought, that she should solve mysteries.
Right, or it's clearly the name of an Agatha Christie type
Crystal Titwaggler, detective. Private detective.
Yeah.
That was the second most memorable thing, was meeting and experiencing Crystal Titwaggler. And this is only during the first song of the second night. Second song is Count to Ten again. And here comes the most memorable part. We get to the verse about the combine accident and then recount to the audience after we've sung it the tale of the gentleman the night before who had lost his one finger in a combine accident. And I don't know what made me ask it, but I asked, are there any other injured or deformed farmers out there? And a woman down front at the table, oddly enough, in front of me, in the same general area where the man from the night before was, a woman shouts out, removes her prosthetic left leg, and waves it up in the air at us.
Yeah. She was lying, though.
She was lying? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's true. No, she wasn't lying. She called attention to the fact, but she in fact told us that she had been shot hunting.
Exactly. She did not lose it in a combine accident.
The best part about it, I think, was that we then decided that when they air the Crystal Titwaggler mysteries, that this woman should be her sidekick. Every episode, somehow her prosthetic leg should be involved in the plot. Like, say they find the thief and they're tracked him down and he's running away and she pulls it off and throws it at him.
See, I was sort of affected by this. Not because she had a prosthetic limb and not because she showed it so publicly, because it was cool and funny the mm-hmm. way she did it. Like, she was very comfortable
yep.
with herself, and the audience was too. But she came up later, and she was clearly drunk, like, the whole night.
Yep.
I mean, you don't generally take off your leg and parade it in front of a crowd of people, unless you've got a little bit in, yeah.
A little bit.
So she came up, and we're chatting and just kind of, you know, just shooting the breeze, her and her husband. And at one point, she said, well, but you got to agree with me. Come on. You got to agree with me that, you know, that joke about the combine, it's not funny, right? It's not funny, right? And she wanted very much for me to agree that having humor based on the loss of limbs was just empirically not funny. All right. And I couldn't do it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I could, if she had said it was insensitive or anything else.
Yep.
But I could not, in all honesty, say that that joke is not funny.
Yep.
And I sort of felt bad. You know, I wanted to say, really, it's not personal, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we made some jokes, like, on stage afterwards that I thought sort of gave our frame of mind, which is like, wow, you know, we can ask for anything up here and it'll happen, you know.
Yep.
I want a dozen chocolate chip cookies, you know, it will appear.
Yeah.
That's what kind of night it is.
Yep.
And there's the topic that I had for the out on the limb category.
Is
humor itself. And certainly there is a lot of humor that is not going to offend anybody.
Mm-hmm.
At what point is it appropriate? And of course, I know, you know, Paul, you and I, we share a sentiment about this. But you folks out there, I mean, some of you may know our material and sometimes feel a little uncomfortable about some of the jokes we make.
Mm-hmm.
At what point, you know, is there a universal truth about humor? That is it wrong that a joke might involves something that someone would feel sensitive about. Let me put it that way. Like the woman with the prosthetic leg.
Right.
Because obviously I felt a little bad about it, so...
Yeah, I mean, it was certainly a little bit awkward. It was mostly fine, and everybody was enjoying themselves, including this woman. But yeah, it was a little bit awkward.
10-minute mark was 3 minutes ago.
Yeah. And you and I have had this discussion quite a bit, and, you know, our stance...
Well, we care. We do care.
Yeah, we care. Our stance, you know, as being edgy comedians that we are, and having songs with...
I'm sorry. I thought you said edgy comedians, like educational comedians.
that's our new line of work. Oh, that's beautiful. Oh, get that. Go reserve that URL right now.
Is it with the dash or not? That's the
we'll have to get both.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
It sounds like a Popeye malapropism.
Edgy comedians.
But, you know, as comedians who do edgy material as we are, while you certainly don't want to look to offend, you know, intentionally and often, although there are certainly comics that do that, that's not our particular cup of tea. But at the same time, you can't... You have to have some internal consistency. Like, you can't necessarily out of hand shy away from a topic just because it's potentially offensive. That's not to say that you should automatically do jokes about every topic, but you shouldn't immediately write off any topic. Or, you know, we'll occasionally get emails from people, and they're valid opinions, valid emails from people saying, you know, they found this particular thing or that particular thing offensive. You know, say it's a mildly racist joke or ethnic joke or what have you. And my personal point of view has always been, you know, you didn't have any problem when we were bashing on the Catholics through the past two songs, but now all of a sudden you've grown sensitive. You know, you have to, you know, you may not, you don't have to find it funny, but you have to at least allow for the fact that, you know, everybody's going to find something offensive. So just, you know, lighten up and let it go by. And eventually you'll find something else we do funny again, in theory.
All right. I'm calling the ball on this topic.
Okay.
Only because I think that this sort of is the ellipses point where,
yeah, know, I think that's fair.
If you folks have, if you like our material or don't, this is your opportunity to sound off.
Yeah.
And just your ideas about humor. And we've been talking about it for like 10 minutes.
Yeah. Okay. I sort of plowed my way right into that topic. Now it's your choice.
Well, I've got two. The categories are Top Cat and Wishful Thinking. And I can't say I really favor one over the other. I'll say Top Cat probably has more fun, light, weird potential since we got off to a heavy note.
More meat on its bones. Let's do Top Cat then.
All right. So, as Paul mentioned, we worked with the comic Henry Phillips this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also a musical comedian. He plays guitar, excellent guitarist as well. And he does a bit about, not a song, but just a bit about how cool it would be if they bred a cat that was as large as a dog. And I'm not going to...
Oh, no, that wasn't Henry. That was Paul F. Tompkins.
Oh, I feel like a total asshole right now.
That's okay. It was a lot of comedy this weekend. We were listening to the Paul F. Tompkins CD, well, on the iPod, but you know what I mean.
So there's a comedian, Paul F. Tompkins, who goes by Twitterkins on Twitter.
Very good. Good recovery.
Very, very funny comic that Paul and I listened to in between shows with Henry Phillips.
Wow, that was an awesome recovery, man.
You like that?
You landed that dismount.
You have to make a lot of mistakes for a long time to get that smooth. So he has a bit about how cool it would be if you bred a cat as large as a dog.
When we're back to our original premise. Hooray!
Now, here's the funny thing. It's not ha-ha funny. Is Gillian, my wife, and I were watching the show on the Animal Planet called... just Animal Planet, is it? There's not a definite article there.
No, it's not the Animal Planet. No.
Not like the Googles.
Yeah.
Anyway, called like Cats 101, where they go through these breeds of cats.
Right,
one
right.
of them is called the Savannah, which is a crossbreed of a wild cat called a Serval and a domestic cat, which creates, fill in the blank,
a cat as big as a dog.
Yes, yes. Now, my point isn't just that it exists and that's funny that Paul F. Tompkins would be talking about
you're turning
it.
Turning into Curly Joe here.
I know. I'm getting there. Not just the coincidence of it, which is kind of cool when you add it to a prosthetic leg and a man with a finger missing from a combine accident.
Right.
The thing cost $20,000.
Ayoosh.
Now, getting beyond the fact that, you know, you could have got a perfectly awesome animal from, you know, your local shelter, you know.
Right.
Or you could have bought, you know, two Hyundais or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
You could have even cloned your existing pet for $20,000. The question to you, Paul, and to you people out there, and I have my answers on my page, what would it be worth it for you, animal-wise, if they could breed it, that you would pay $20,000 for it?
$20,000, huh?
Like, while you think, Paul, this to sort of get you in the frame of mind.
Yep.
First thing I thought of was, if they could breed a dog that could play poker.
Yeah, that would totally work.
I would buy, like, six of them.
Yep.
And I would arrange them around a table.
And you'd recreate the painting.
Yep, and I would just sit in the house and watch them play poker all day. Like, they couldn't talk. You know, maybe one
could,
or
they, they could actually play poker, though, like not just hold cards.
Yeah.
But like they would like know strategy and be able to, you know, calculate odds.
Yeah. The chips would be shifting around the table. You know, maybe one or two of them could be bred to smoke a stogie.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you'd have to alter some of their heads so that they like the bowler hat would look right.
Right.
But that's one of the things that I would probably pay $20,000 if they could breed that.
Mm-hmm.
Big Bird, if they could actually create Big Bird.
I'd be done with that.
I would probably, I mean, no, not like a bird that was huge and looked like Big Bird. Or maybe any of the Muppets.
Yeah.
Like, I bet if you mixed enough of the right animals together, mm-hmm. you could probably get Grover.
Yep.
So I don't know what they would be, if it would be like, I don't know, a marmot.
Yep.
And I don't know what would give you Grover.
I'd blow $20,000 on a Mogwai.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would do that.
Right.
But I think probably if I had $20,000 and they could make me any animal.
Right.
I would probably have to go with exploding sheep. But the sheep, that was with several caveats. First of all, when the sheep explodes, it's vanilla pudding everywhere.
Okay. Okay.
And it's water soluble, so right. you can get the stains out. And the sheep somehow magically reforms right. every morning afterwards. So right. like you well, can only blow it up once per day. So it's not like you can just, you know, send your sheep in everywhere and just, you know, right. make a complete mess.
It would be a very expensive pet habit if it yeah. could not reconstitute itself.
But it'd be sort of like Groundhog Day, like where at any point during the day you could just send your sheep in somewhere and blow it up and cover everything in pudding. And then the next day you'd still have your sheep.
So sort of like it was... cloaked in its own little space-time vacuum.
That,
yeah. Sort of like the restaurant at the end of the universe.
Exactly.
Speaking of that, that's one of the ones
Milliways! Hey, I am a geek. I knew that.
Yep. So Douglas Adams' cow, the one that they serve that, you know, recommends which part of itself.
Oh, yes. the one bred to tell you how delicious yeah. it is.
Yeah. I would also have them breed a fish that would cook itself perfectly. Because it is a bitch to cook fish.
Yeah, cooking fish sucks.
And then I would also want them to be able to breed either a dog or cat that you could give, like, a human face. Like, you know, I'm a happy, well-adjusted, and not bitter person, so I don't have, like, an ex whatever that I would want to give that face.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that would be kind of cool, you know, that someone could be, you know, put their boss that canned them or their ex-boyfriend right. on, you know, a dog and get satisfaction from that.
By, like, kicking the dog or just the fact that dog has, like, the person now has a dog body?
Well, they wouldn't actually be a person. They would still be a dog.
Right, but you know what I mean. Like, the person is now represented in dog form.
Right.
Would it be like a mangy dog?
Well, that it would be up to you. Like, they would have
see.
Eventually, they're going to have the technology where, you know, you can not only decide the coat and, you know, the size of the dog, but, you know, you could. All the parameters.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that was weird.
That was odd. That was very strange. I don't know what you've been smoking, my friend.
And, you know, I think we'd better quit while we're where we are.
Oh, I will. I want to introduce a new thing, a new okay. quick thing to the podcast. I don't even
sure.
know how long we'll use it. But, you know, we were talking last week about using our powers for awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
And recommending things. This isn't so much of a sending people to a particular underappreciated thing or place so much as just a recommendation. I not half an hour ago finished watching Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story, which mm-hmm. I had not previously seen.
Yep.
Even though it had been recommended numerous times and I heard good things about it. Hilarious. I had medium expectations and it exceeded pretty much all of them.
Now, how is this a thing?
This is just a thing that I'm saying you all should go see Walk Hard: The Dewey Cox Story. But I mean, do not bring your children.
Well, we can always just, you know, tell people what's good.
I know. Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, we just, it's the tell people what's good feature.
Teen Wolf.
Paul and Storm podcast.
Teen Wolf. If you're flipping channels and Teen Wolf is there, you're going to enjoy that.
Can I admit something to you?
Go ahead.
I have never seen a single minute of Teen Wolf.
That's why I'm saying it. I was flipping channels the other day. I had never seen it. And parts of it are horribly embarrassing for everybody involved, including the person watching it.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, it's actually got entertainability. I wouldn't say it's a great film, because it's not.
Nope.
But it's got some heart. It's got some heart. That actually ties into the other subject. I know I was like all like, oh.
You were all like ready to go. Yeah.
Yeah, but this ties in so well to the topic I had, which is wishful thinking.
Uh-huh.
It's sort of tangential to what we're talking about right now.
Okay.
You mentioned that the Walk Hard, it was something you ended up really liking. It sounds to me like it's something that you were not expecting to like that much.
Not as much as I did, certainly, yes.
This is sort of the opposite, which is, for me, it's Doctor Who. And what it is about Doctor Who is I have tried many times to get into it, mm-hmm. and I wish I could, but I can't.
Mm-hmm.
So, Paul, that's the question for you and you folks out there. Is there a movie, a film, a food, a person that you kind of feel like you should be into and you've tried, but it just ain't there?
There's
a gender, you know, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, a gender. Thank you. There's a crap load of music out there that I wish I could appreciate and I'm told that I should enjoy.
Uh-huh.
I can't even think of any specific artists off of the top of my head. Radiohead, for one.
Yeah, I'm with
to
you.
Mind.
I'm with you on that.
You know, just, you know, people, you know, music that people just are rapturous about.
Right.
That,
like,
you know,
Wilco.
Another one.
Yeah.
Outside of a few songs, Bob Dylan leaves me kind of cold.
Yeah.
Tangled Up in Blue, I enjoy. And, you know, the classic hits, so to speak. And Don't Think Twice, It's All Right.
Oh, yeah.
I enjoy. Beyond those, there's not, I just don't quite get it. Poetry.
Yep, I'm with you there.
Cannot enjoy, I'd say, a good 99.8% of poetry.
Nope.
Try though I might.
Major League Soccer.
There you go.
Tried it. Can't do it. Maybe if it were more, you know, well, not huge into sports anyway, but it sort of seems like that it would be a hip thing and kind of part of being part of the world community to know about soccer.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't happening.
Oh, I had another thing to recommend.
Yep.
Here's a slightly less obvious thing. After having seen numerous little bits and pieces all over the place and having missed it its first time around, but knowing it, certainly enjoying what I had seen, I finally downloaded the first season of The State onto my iPod past trip, and we both enjoyed a good healthy dose of the first 5 episodes of The State, which is a sketch comedy show that was on MTV in the early 90s. That a lot of the people in it went on to do great things, including things like Reno 911 and Stella and a great many things. And awesome. And we say this as people who are extremely... can one be dubious? Yes, one dubious about a sketch comedy in general.
If I can paraphrase you, maybe you were already getting there.
No, you go ahead.
But, like... What is truly entertaining about it is they really knew when the joke was done.
When a sketch had gone just long enough, yes.
Got the most humor out of it, ended it well, on to the next thing.
Cannot tell you how much we appreciated that particular aspect. But
so
yes, go
spirit,
check it out.
In the spirit of The State, I can tell that at this point...
It's time to be done.
Where are we going to be?
We are going to be at the Birchmere in Alexandria, Virginia, and the Ram's Head in Annapolis, Maryland. Those are both sold out. On the 26th, 27th, and 28th of February, we're at the Barrymore Theater in Madison, Wisconsin, the History Theater in St. Paul, Minnesota, and Park West in Chicago. Those are all shows with Jonathan Colton. We are going to be someplace else, the Ark in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
On
Friday, the 6th of March. We are going to be at the House of Blues in Houston on the 13th mm-hmm. of March. We expect to be in Austin on the 15th, which is a Sunday of March, and many other fine shows coming after that.
Go to paulandstorm.com for more information about our music, about us, about the podcast, about joining the Brigade of Minions, about giving us money.
About Geek Madness.
The Geek Madness Tournament getting down there. We are heading for the Elite. The Reasonable Eight is coming up. Sorry, yes. It's the first time we've done this. So do all of that.
It's getting very difficult at this point. Some tough choices to be made.
Yeah.
Every vote counts.
So I'm Storm.
And I am Paul.
And we've been talking about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average. TTFN.
Go do things.
So